Hello, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to the New Mainstream podcast, where we explore the impact of multicultural consumers on marketing and media. I'm your host, Mario Carrasco, and co-founder of Think Now. Today, our guest is Gabriela Alcantara Diaz, founder of Semilla Multicultural. Welcome, Gabby. How are you?
Good. How are you, Mario? Thank you for having me.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for coming on. We've been email corresponding for a while and hopefully work together soon. So it's nice to have you on here. I have some questions set up, but want to chat with you first about your background and a little bit about how you came to be the founder of Semilla Multicultural.
Well, I actually was born in Uruguay, and my mother was from Uruguay. My dad was from Spain. And I was fortunate, came in the very early 70s, where most people probably didn't even know where Uruguay was located, let alone sort of holding a soccer ball. Most of my friends in New York and in Miami were Anglo, as we would call them, in the early 70s. And a lot of them were obviously from the Caribbean, Cuban American. So basically, I was, for the most part, raised in South Florida, Miami, made it my hometown, created my family here. And basically, interestingly enough, back in the day, we had a very strong advertising hub of non-Hispanic or non-multicultural agencies at that time. And I worked for Carnival Cruise Lines, like probably a lot of Hispanics work through high school and college. And I was actually planning to possibly work for a big agency back in the day called McFarlane & Dreyer. But at the same time, there was an interview with a small shop. And mind you, at that point, I didn't even know what multicultural was, just looking for a job. And I ended up going to work for an agency called the IEC Group. And at that time in Miami, there were three women that were incredibly very strong, let's say, in the industry. And fortunately, they were actually all Cuban Americans. So it was Ana Maria Haar, Zubi, Teres Zubi, and Ida Levitan. And they really created a powerhouse of agencies here in Miami. And that's how I got started and worked my way up and became a partner and then a partner with another agency locally here in Miami and then decided to open up my own shop. It'll be 11 years this November, which was...
That's amazing. Yeah. Congratulations. I mean, I love hearing these origin stories, right, of kind of like the big multicultural shops, right? I mean, Zubi stands out for me, of course. I'm on the West Coast, so I hear about the, you know, slightly different shops, but really, it's an interesting advertising in general, because I see like Miami as like the birthplace of multicultural or Hispanic agencies. But it's interesting you noted that before that, obviously, there was a big just kind of, it was just an advertising town, right? Like they're like non-multicultural. Mm-hmm. Very cool. And congrats on the 11 years. I mean, that's pretty amazing for any business, let alone an agency.
It is. And we're still independent. And it's interesting. I've, been in this business for more than 30 years. So you've got your peaks and valleys. It's almost like riding a surfboard, right? There are always waves. And that's how you just manage it. But it's very fulfilling. I went from being a college brat to then understanding the importance of Hispanic market and sort of making a full circle, to really, embracing my culture.
And what's been the niche that Semilla plays in? I know you're, kind of in the middle or just finished up a rebranding from Semilla AD to Semilla Multicultural. What's driving that? And what's kind of, tell us a little bit about the niche that you own or operate in.
So, interestingly enough, when we started here in in Miami when I started in my career, I was very fortunate that oftentimes, you know, when you work for smaller companies, smaller shops, you end up doing a lot more. And we were very fortunate at that time. The founder and the owner had just landed Publix supermarkets a year earlier. And what we found is that Florida, and specifically South Florida, we really were very much more in tune because of the influx of Latin America. So a lot of companies were very open-minded. They aggressively wanted to pursue the Hispanic market, but also it was really looking at a more, what, you know, we call upwardly mobile Hispanic middle class. So because we always had a very diversified marketplace, you know, we focused on multi-ethnicities, but really what we found is that looking at prestige brands, you know, we sort of launched Johnnie Walker. For the first time, you had a premium spirit in the marketplace that we handled for 15 years. And Johnnie Walker basically was the it brand at that time for Scotch. It all started in Miami with Publix supermarkets, growing it from a brand that started with, you know, retail and looking at products and really focusing on a more working woman. Back in the 80s and in the 90s, we were highlighting working women, working Latinas. We launched our first Spanglish campaign in the early 90s. And then we also worked with Bell South Mobility, which actually at that time, Wendy Clark, which is, you know, an amazing inspirational leader in our industry, she was actually our client. And she was a manager at that time with Bell South Mobility. And we launched that. So we really felt, you know, when we started our agency, my partner and I back 11 years ago, sort of doing a little soul searching. And we said, you know, oftentimes you try to reinvent the wheel, but in sort of doing that soul searching, we always came back to our roots were always, number one, focused on a more upscale, upwardly mobile Hispanic. We were probably the first regionally and nationally. We had top tier brands. We understood the marketplace. We understood the ethnicity, and we also understood small businesses. We, you know, were very heavy into the banking industry. So we highlighted not only, you know, cashing checks and bank accounts, but really looking at premier credit cards. We looked at small business campaigns for financial clients. So we really felt as though we still wanted to hone in on that. That was really our point of difference as an agency. And obviously everybody wanted to market to the larger community, you know, the overall Hispanic market. And for us, it really felt right. And it wasn't really about bigness. You know, we really wanted to make a difference. And we're always looking for the next big thing in Hispanic America, not necessarily just being the masses. We want to be the frontier. We want to lead, you know, the marketplace into investment. We want to lead the marketplace into wellness lifestyle. So that's what we continue to do. And with Semilla Ad, you know, at first, really, it's the brand itself. And Semilla, you know, it's really stands for the origin of a pure idea. But then this time around, we were thinking, when we think of multicultural, you know, you and I shared this on email, and, you know, there's this whole concept of owning your truth. You know, Oprah Winfrey is really big on that. And we felt as though as a company, and possibly maybe in the multicultural space, we need to own that truth. And that's what we are. America has always been multicultural. It will continue to be multicultural. And we feel that's who we are. So we just wanted to, I guess, just be more upfront about it.
I love that. And I love your focus on that niche, right? The upwardly mobile Latino, because oftentimes I feel like in the industry, we talk about segmentation from a generational perspective, country of origin, language, but rarely do we talk about, I mean, really what we're talking about is household income. And, you know, income determines so much in this country, right? In terms of from a behavior standpoint. So I think that's a great niche to be focused on. Mm-hmm. And another thing that you were mentioning about companies being willing to embrace multicultural, specifically Latinos, just the mere fact of where their headquarters are so important and something that we don't talk about very much, right? Like if you're headquartered in a place that isn't diverse and you're a larger company, it's hard to see or think beyond that. I think that's definitely a benefit that Miami has over other cities or places that you can be headquartered, because you really see the diversity in the US right outside your window, right?
Exactly. And it's almost as though, you know, I always like to say there's certain key DMAs across the US, obviously Miami being one of them, where we're self-sufficient enclaves. So at the end of the day, what drives Miami and specifically Dade County, almost 100% of the marketplace, you know, 80% is Hispanic. So basically it's a moving organism that is really driven at the core, and the outer rim is all Hispanic. So you already have layers of generation, you have layers of wealth, you have layers of political clout. And that's how most ethnic groups and multicultural groups have been able to gain wealth in America over centuries.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And we were talking about this right before we jumped onto the podcast, but I think this is a good time to talk about kind of what's changing in Miami and how these influences that you talked about are shaping it. So we know right now kind of the hot topic on technology is all these technology companies moving into Miami. I mean, what's your take? You're on the ground there, and we were talking about how you feel like tech's going to benefit from that. What do you see there going on?
So, for example, I actually made some commentary on LinkedIn. There was a group of individuals talking about this whole, you know, sort of drive of real estate, and also a lot of it is being driven by this tech growth. And like you were saying, that you and I were talking about, is that Miami in general has always been influenced by Latin America with wealth. So technology has been part of that process and that evolution. So a lot of talent that is used in Miami for technology is not in India, but is in Latin America. So the fact that now, to me, I find it to be incredibly it's such a bright spot, and I'm so excited about it. And it's being led by Suarez. You know, he's a Cuban American, Republican, Cuban, born here in Miami, and he's the next generation. And we've already had a tech hub of Latin Americans that have immigrated here and have created, you know, the working space environment, which started about 15 years ago here in Miami. And now having some of these billionaires that are actually coming to Miami and scouting for talent, and then having this young population of techs that are housed in Latin America, it just makes it for having both frontiers, where in Silicon Valley, I think you had an international arm. Obviously, this is not my area of expertise, but that international arm may have been more in Asia, whereas here, that extension is really more Latin America.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, it's diversifying tech from a different perspective, and it's interesting because it's really kind of dovetailing. Right now, we're seeing an explosion of tech companies across Latin America, so it's like this perfect storm for Miami being the tech hub and also a conduit to Latin America, not only from a proximity perspective, but also the people there that are actually in the technology space. You have people that from Latin America or Latin American descent that that are that exactly. have tech talent.
And like, you know, Manny Medina was a pioneer in the telecom industry. I mean, when we handled Bell South, which is AT&T, and they, you know, they went into Latin America to restructure the entire system in Latin America with Bell South International. So there's, you know, there's some deeply rooted pioneers in this marketplace.
For sure, for sure. And kind of bringing it back, I mean, you know, we think about tech, we think about higher income, and this is kind of full circle to your expertise. So what made you see the gap in the marketplace as a founder in terms of reaching kind of upscale Hispanics in the US? Like how did you come to that idea? Did you see that companies weren't targeting them? Did you see that they were, but not in a culturally relevant way? Like, I just want to learn more about that.
We were part of the marketplace. It's as simple as that. We were speaking to ourselves, and you are what you see. And the benefit of Miami was that, you know, there are only two kinds of immigrants, right? You've got your political and economic. And for a very long time, obviously, when anything goes south in Latin America, most of the, you know, the 1% or whatever you want to call them, the very wealthy, you know, they already have money in Miami, or they come and now they're doing it again. You know, they're saying, okay, I've got my business in Latin America, but now with everything that's happening with COVID, I may have to just have a front business in Miami. In South Florida, because we don't know what's going to happen internationally in the international market. So it's better to be in American territory to see what we do after COVID. So that's been the mindset, and that's what's influenced the structure of Miami for a very long time, coupled with the fact that you also had a diversified marketplace. You know, it started with Cuban Americans, then you had your Central Americans, you have your South Americans. So having that blend of brain power, entrepreneurship, all that has helped. So, you know, at the end of the day, it wasn't as though first that we had to convince clients in Florida because they were seeing it. Some of their own clients were their own business partners and they saw the customer base and the fact that we as a community were living it. We were asking for small business loans. We were asking for, you know, shopping at higher end supermarkets. You know, for example, we did a study for Bird's Eyes, and when we talked about convenience, and we talked about sort of being a lot more open to frozen foods. Well, we found that a lot of times there were women in South Florida that were much more open to convenience and basically cutting the cooking time. I mean, I'm talking years ago, but those kind of insights. So we were part of that community. And I think that at the end of the day, a lot of the marketing is born from the community at large. The marketers that live in the area, obviously you expand your knowledge with research and understanding the entire marketplace. But, you know, it was unique to South Florida, but it allowed us to be the leaders. So, you know, at the end of the day, we just felt that it was a niche, but it was really an evolution that is happening across America.
100%. And we see that in the numbers, right? I mean, Latinos across the nation leading home ownership, household income is rising. The pandemic, unfortunately, hit Latinos very hard. But I think a lot of the comeback from an economic perspective is going to be driven by Latinas in this country. And I wanted to talk a little bit about, you know, thinking about our audience. A lot of our audience come from kind of larger companies, Fortune 1000, blue chip companies. And one of the perceptions out there, I think, that you benefit from being Miami because you see it is that, you know, once Latinos or any other cultural group that come from outside the United States, once they reach a certain income, they assimilate or acculturate, whatever word you want to use, to American culture. In other words, reaching certain income brackets, now you're not going to necessarily need to reach these consumers with special kind of messaging that appeals from a cultural perspective, because now that they reach a certain income level, they can be targeted just like any other consumer. How do you combat that? Like, or, and I know it's different for you because you're in Miami and you see how the consumer is different, but like, what kind of advice would you give to other companies that aren't in Miami and don't see that on an everyday basis?
I'm very passionate about the topic. You know, given the fact that I've been in this business for 30 years, you know, I find it that it's a legacy on behalf of, in memory of my parents and my baby brother, but also for my children, to embolden them. And I actually wrote an interesting article about the word cultura, because oftentimes, you know, when you're cultured and you have culture or you're multicultural, in Spanish, when Hispanics are also cultured, for them, it's important for your audience to understand that as you become more wealthy as a Hispanic, the fact that you can speak Spanish is a sign, and it's a reflection on your wealth and the way you see life, and the fact that you're much more international. So you're more versed. You know more languages. So it's not a negative. It actually becomes an asset, which also then leads me, there are two other points that I'd like to talk about, which leads me to the fact that your audience needs to understand that obviously the growth is with US born Hispanics. A lot of millennials and obviously the Gen Zs, they basically have choice, and they have a choice to speak however they'd like to speak in whichever language they choose. And they also have a choice with which brands they want to associate with. Unlike their parents or grandparents that were shoved or possibly silenced because of their immigration status, or because they were Hispanic, these children and grandchildren don't feel the same way. So it's important for marketers to understand that when you talk about culture and language is the way they communicate, it's about respecting who the consumer is, and that consumer decides how they want to speak to you.
That's a great point. I mean, you're pointing to something that's fundamentally different about this generation, and that about choice. And that's a great way to phrase it. And I think to add to your point, not only do they have choice on how they want to speak or how they want to identify, there's also so much choice in consuming content from your culture, right? I think older millennials, I think Gen X, you know, grandparents, grandparents, they didn't have as much access to everything that we have access to now, right? To stay in touch with your country of origin, you know, everything from memes to music to movies. There's just so much more to consume now. I think that's also keeping kind of the culture portion alive that you're
exactly,
talking about.
Exactly. Exactly. And, you know, when we think about, I mean, I think you've done amazing work in your research area and really understanding the values. And, you know, with Gen Zs, again, culture is, for them, it's an asset. And for the upscale consumer, when you're cultured, is because you have a more international frame of mind, your perspective, your outlook in life. So to be multilingual is an element of sophistication. There isn't a downside.
That's a good point. Yeah, just, you know, it's a positive thing now, right? When previously it could have been seen as a negative thing. And I think this is a good segue into the next question I was going to ask you. I think we've seen a really big shift on how in, 2020, everything that happened with George Floyd and Black Lives Matter, companies have started to see multicultural consumers in a different way. I guess I want to talk, how has that affected your business and the way that you think about marketing? I mean, or has it?
And I'm very truthful. I think there are sort of two sides to the coin. I think that pop culture, I find that some marketers are using multicultural as part of a pop culture fad strategy, but they're truly not committed and they don't understand the difference.
I agree with that. I think there was a lot of statements put out last year that was just window dressing, right? A statement without any kind of commitment to serving these consumers better on every level is just a statement.
Right. And sometimes, showing something that's a little different and edgy, which is, the realm of pop culture. So you use things that are different, and what are different? Multicultural consumers. So they become props.
Definitely. Yeah. And I mean, that's one thing, we had a lot of companies reach out to us on opinion. I mean, and it's interesting because we're a market research company. We're not diversity and inclusion experts. But that is one thing that we always recommended is to look in-house, kind of what are your core values and mission as a company, and whatever you're going to do from a multicultural perspective, is it in alignment? And if not, is it in alignment with your mission and values as a company? And if it's not, you need to take a look at those mission and values.
Exactly. Because you really do have to discern. The same way that you evaluate a woman's strategy that may be similar to your male strategy or your total strategy, but in focusing on a gender strategy, the same applies to multicultural. And, sometimes I'd like to give the example of looking at two households and, from an upwardly mobile Hispanic and non-Hispanic white household, you've got, two couples, they're both in their 30s, they have one child, but one couple, that's the non-Hispanic white couple, basically the husband is, into a management position. The wife doesn't work, takes care of her child. Maybe they already have some investments. Maybe they have father or grandfather has given them some money, helped them to purchase a house. Whereas you've got maybe infusion of capital coming into the household. But then you look at demographically and you see the Hispanic equivalent. You say, oh, well, they're both making the same amount of money. Yeah, but when you then evaluate that Hispanic household, you find that it's a dual income earning household. In order to make that make the cutoff of an upwardly mobile household, and then they also have other expenses. Instead of having infusion of capital, they may have to pay rent for their mother, or they may still have to send money back home to a relative. So then rather than having cash coming in, cash is going out. But if you just look at it from a superficial standpoint, right, you've got three, members in a family, they're making the same, but they've got very different challenges.
And that's full circle right there, right? I asked you what, just because a multicultural consumer is making the same amount of income as a non-multicultural doesn't mean they are the same. And that and right there is tied specifically to culture, right? How we define family is very different in Latino culture to non-Latino culture, right? I mean, family is not just wife and kids, maybe parents. It's cousins, aunts, uncles, and maybe people that you don't have everyday interaction living in country of origin, exactly. Potentially.
And, you know, and they both care about family. It's the dynamics are just different.
For sure. For sure. Well, Gabby, we're coming up on our time. Thank you so much. It's been a great conversation. I appreciate you coming on and sharing your knowledge with us. For people that want to connect with you online, could you share your social media handles?
So the best way to find you? Yes, they can go to Semilla Multicultural on LinkedIn or Instagram are really our preferred handles. And then you can see some of our work and some of the conversations that we try to share with the community at large.
Thanks again, Gabby, and thank you, everybody,
Mario,
for listening.
Thank you.
Thanks to everyone listening in. To get more multicultural insights, check us out at thinknow.com and follow us on social media. You can also subscribe to this podcast on your favorite platform. Final thank you to our producer, Lucas Martinez, who created our intro music and makes our podcast sound great. To email him, reach out to martinez.lucas.a@gmail.com.